You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. My name is Noam Dwoman. I'm the owner of The Comedy Cellar. We're at the back table at The Comedy Cellar. I'm here, as always, with the, my very, very...
Well, you can categorize me as you will. Usually, you've been saying you're one of your best friends.
I think you are one of my best friends.
Shouldn't you know that right off?
Well, it took a while. Dan, you know, Dan's people say he might be on the spectrum or whatever it is. But for whatever it is, it's not easy to get warm to Dan. But I think we have some warmth. Anyway, Mr. Dan Natterman.
Thank you.
We have
speaking of warmth. There's a little it's a little hot in here.
All right, Dan. And we have Mr. Danny Cohen is here.
Hello.
Who's a relatively new member of the Comedy Cellar lineup here. Jessica Kirsten brought you in? Is that
No, Lenny Marcus. But Jessica tried many years ago, but I wasn't ready.
To no avail.
I wasn't interested years ago. I wanted to hang out.
And a legend, Mr. Jackie Martling is here. It's in the description, a legendary stand-up comedian who formerly was a regular on the Howard Stern Show. He's in the Howard Stern movie, as I recall.
Yeah.
He has been a stand-up comedian for going on 40 years and continues to sell out shows around the country. And I'm very happy to have you here. I'm a big fan.
I'm thrilled to be here, and I think I should tell you the secret to selling out is working very small rooms.
it does help. You know, we're opening in Vegas in April, and it's a big room, and it's scaring the...
Well, it's 300 seats. Is that considered a big room in your?
You know what? I actually sold out a 300-seater a week and a half ago, and I'm still scratching my head why it happened. But I think 300 is perfect size.
I think so,
300,
too. I like 300.
500. You know, 300
300 is a perfect size, I think, for a comedy show because you got the intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, 300, this was at a theater, you know, like, and 300 people in a theater. The theater's teeny because the people are so close.
Right.
300 people in a nightclub is, you know.
That's a problem. I think it's better when they're close together.
Oh, yeah. Much, much better.
Much better. That's one of the issues we're facing because, I don't want to go into it. But do you play Vegas at all?
A little bit, but not, you know, I used to headline at the Top of the Riv and, you know, sell some tickets, like, you know, 2,000 tickets in a weekend, you know, and it was spectacular, you know, because when you're hot, they treat you, you know, who used to book me there was Steve Sciarippa, who became...
Sopranos.
Sopranos.
Ah, yeah.
Bobby Bag of Donuts.
Yeah.
Great character. Great guy.
So, and you stopped working?
I go when they call. You know, I actually did a show about a year or two ago where there was like eight or nine of us at the Orleans in one of those huge, huge rooms. And that was spectacular. I made a lot of money and had a lot of fun. I was like, wow, this is like the old days, you know, but, you know, I don't go every week, you know.
I got questions for each of you, and they may both be radioactive questions, but listen, you used to work for Stern, so he always asked whatever he wanted. This is a question I've always wanted to ask you.
8 inches.
Second question. You left the Stern Show.
Yes, sir.
Was it a mistake?
No.
If you had it to do over again.
No,
it,
you know, somebody just...
It was over money, correct?
Yeah, well, and, yes, and... I'm 70, and I tell people, they're shocked, but I say, I would not change one second of my life. And I screwed up plenty and did a lot of wrong things and fun things and not, but it's just been a terrific ride. Now, I have a beautiful house on the water. I can't even imagine what that would look like if I was still making $600,000 or $700,000 or $800,000 a year. I mean, you know, I just bought it, and then I pulled the rug out from underneath myself. But it was a necessary move for... There's never one reason, you know. I had to get divorced. I had to quit drinking. You know, it's a whole long story.
You were drinking while you were doing the Stern Show?
Yeah. Well, not during. Yes. And the Stern Show probably saved my life because I had to be up at 4:30 5 days a week, or else God knows what would have happened. You know, but you know, there's always a million different reasons. And I tell people, you know, it wasn't a mistake, but the truth of it is, a couple months after I left, I called up and said, look, I'll take the deal if it's still on the table. And it wasn't.
Why do you think it wasn't?
Because
you were a big part of his success.
Well, it depends on who you talk to. But
he seemed to feel
that
way.
It's so funny. You know, there's a lot of money. And there was all kinds of stuff. You know, you're going to miss out on the fame and blah, blah, blah. But after a while, I realized how unnatural it is. Like, to sit in a room with four or five people and laugh your balls off for 4 or 5 hours, 5 days a week.
And get paid for
it. You take that. Forget money. Forget fame. You forget. You're so used to that. It never dawned on me. That's what you miss. Not the paycheck. Not anything. I mean, we'd sit there and, you know, at the end of every day, it was like, you know, the last day I was there, 15 years after I started, or 18 years after I started, was as much fun as the first day.
Well, what made you go back and say, oh, you know, is the deal still on the table?
Because I realized that how much I missed, the, you know, the whole thing. You know,
who advised you? Did you have an agent?
And I knew damn well there's a real good chance that you know, that it was, it's like going back to your girlfriend after you break up with her or something.
After she caught you cheating. Because he was pissed at you, right? He was pissed. Or he resented it.
Who knows? You know, you never get a straight story. But it's so funny because people ask me about leaving and I tell them the story and they'll go like, well, that's what you said 15 years ago. And I said, well, because that's what happened.
That's what happened.
I don't have a, you know, because he tells a different story every time.
No, I mean, I get the feeling, and I've been through this on a very small scale. That you build something, and then the people who are with you along for the ride, now you don't know who's accurate here, begin to think that they were more responsible for where you got than you might think they were. And then where the truth lies, I don't know.
Absolutely. It's a gray area, man.
Yeah. And then when they begin to, at some point, they throw that weight around and it causes resentment. Now, that resentment could be warranted. That resentment could be insecurity on your own part. Say, no, I did this. I don't want to feel that he was responsible for whatever it is, you know. But I got the feeling, and I don't think about it, that he resented the stand that you took in that negotiation, and that's why.
And he's allowed, but you know, I tell people what I did as American is apple pie. You know, yeah. I had a job. I asked for more money. They said no, and I went home. You know,
right.
You know, if you're a New York Yankee and you don't get your contract, you know, you stop playing at some point and stay the hell home. Yeah. So you know, who knows?
Well,
you know,
I
can't believe the people are still. Yeah, it's been almost, you know, 20 years. Well, it's 18 years, and people. It's like it happened yesterday. Hey, Jackie, miss you, man.
Well, to
miss
part
me,
of,
I haven't been
well,
there.
It's like when
years.
Trapper John left MASH. I mean, it's like the show. It's the show went on without you, but it never actually. You are an integral part of that show, and
you know, and it's the old thing. When,
no
you know,
question.
Depending on who you talk to. You know, you get emails every day. Oh, the show never was the same without you. The show's better now without you. You know, and everything in between.
The show's good without you as well. But it's not the same as it was
right.
with you.
It would be a good show if he was just standing in an elevator with a microphone. But
he is that gifted, right?
Yeah.
The guy's.
Yeah. But I wasn't claiming that I was responsible for half of it. It was like, all right, if Howard is 98% of it, and we're 2% of it.
Give me 2%.
Yeah,
you probably didn't even ask for 2%.
No,
because he makes it.
And that was a whole bone of a contention because you'd never ever know how much money was being made because they were printing money. They must have had a press in the basement. I mean, it was scary, you know.
But I'm telling you, the guy, like, his books are great. His movie was great. He had
so much fun.
Very few missteps, you know. I admire him no end.
Right, and you know, and I was there, you know, from very close to the onset now, and it was spectacular ride. I mean, we went to Pluto, you know.
Were you there in Washington when he started in Washington?
I wasn't
right?
in Washington when he. I love this. I never get sick of the story. I was working. There was a place called Garvin's in Washington, D.C. Garvin's Laughing. And it was at this guy, Harry Montecruzzo, and Jeff Penn, great guys. And the New York comics, we go down there and. It was funny. The first time I went down to audition, it was me and Rob Bartlett and Eddie Murphy and Richie Minervini. And they basically said, get in the car and go home, you know, because we all suck. But whenever I was working there in like August of 1982, and the owner said, hey, there's this nut that used to do broadcasts in his underwear on Friday mornings from the club, and he just got fired. He's moving to NBC in New York. You should look him up. And I, of course, never heard of him. I never listened to radio. You know, I was a drunk that played music, you know. And so I sent my three albums blind. You know, at that point, I had three homemade comedy LPs that I had produced, you know. And we sent them to everybody. If I met you on the street, Danny, I'd say, hey, let me send you, you know. And so I just a set of three albums and three cassettes and all the crap and just Howard Stern care at NBC. WNBC AM. And then a couple months later, you know, the woman who's going to be my wife, she called up and said, hey, that guy Howard Stern called. They called up. You got right on the phone. You want to come in, hang out on the air?
And it worked out.
Walked in and sat down with Howard and Robin and Fred. And at the end of the day, they said, you're a lot of fun. Come back next week. And then...
Wow. It's kind of like how I got on this podcast.
It is? Yeah.
No, it is.
I didn't mean to go on and on. I'm
sorry. No, it's a great story.
It's less obviously historical, but it's similar in that I wasn't originally part of this podcast, and then I was invited in as a guest, and Noam was so impressed.
Well, Dan, I gave you, you know, there's a check for a cool $1,500 coming your way this week. Did you know that?
No, wow. I didn't.
Yeah, for the last 3 years of services. No, we got another check from Sirius.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you're also working your way up to being one of his friends.
Yeah, well, I think
he's been to my house.
I have been.
Howard doesn't socialize, right? Howard didn't socialize.
You know, not really.
So this is a book you're promoting? This is a book?
Yeah, The Joke Man Bowder Stern. These are my little ads. I met a guy 25 years ago who made me a bunch of these because he was a big fan. He's been making them for free for 25 years.
Is it a new book or it's coming out?
It's out. It's out. It's been out for since October 24th, and it's selling into the dozens, and I'm very proud. It tells the whole Stern story, so the fans are going nuts.
It's called Bowder Stern. Obviously, we know what Stern comes from. Is bow a play on words, or you just...
Bow to stern. I mean, I live on the water. I've been a nautical guy my whole life. Beginning to end, front to back, you know.
I like this. And the card is their guitar pick.
Sir.
Great. I have one other question, but this isn't really... This is just true, but it occurs to me about Howard Stern that he's been very lucky and very adept at avoiding any of the resentment and ire of the Me Too movement.
Maybe he didn't do anything.
Well, no, I'm not talking about just.
I think he got out of Dodge just in time.
His personal behavior, I'm not. I don't. No accusation whatsoever. But things like getting women with issues to humiliate themselves with vibrators in front of, you know, and everybody laughing about it, whatever. This could be taken by the women's movement as being disrespectful to women or exploitative of women.
Well, it was, you know, it was crazy exploitative, except they would line up. They would do anything. They wanted to be there. It wasn't like, you know, anybody got
you grabbed
tied
your
up
pussy,
and dragged
they didn't care.
Yeah, right. You know, they came in and did anything. That was mine and Fred's job, to come up with things that they wouldn't do. You know, we used to make, when Magic, you remember Magic Johnson had a talk show?
Yeah.
And it was horrible.
Yeah, awful.
And Howard used to play his monologue, and we'd laugh at it for an hour or two every day. And one day they called up and said, Magic wants you to come on the show, Howard. And he said to me and Fred, you got to come up with an idea that they won't let us do, because I don't want to just say no to Magic Johnson. So we came up with the wild idea that we had a band called The Losers with Howard on the organ and me on guitar and Fred on bass, whatever, Scott on the drums. And we said, we want to come on the show and play Wipeout. And instead of the drum breaks, we want people to fart. And they called back and they said, okay. And we went on the Magic Johnson show and we played Wipeout. When we stopped, there was a girl and a guy bent over and they farted on ABC TV.
It's got to be on YouTube available or something like that.
It's got to be. I've never looked.
Ridiculous. That's a great story.
I mean, you know, there was a bunch of, Los Angeles comics in front, like Drew Carey was there. They had to see it to believe it, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I feel respectful for women, and it's true. You know, they're adults and they want to do it.
Yeah.
But at some point, you say, well, they're an adult, but they wouldn't agree to this if they were healthy, you know? And
well,
at
listen,
that point, it becomes a little exploitative.
If you want to start drawing a line, and I can't say anything because this is as much my fault as anybody's, but we had midget little people. You know, to me, little people sounds more insulting than midget.
I agree.
But we had midgets and slow people, you know.
That's another one, the slow people. Yeah.
You know, and that, to me, you know, if you're a girl and you want to get your face on TV and you want to go come show your boobs, you know, you're of sound mind and body, you know. They put that guy Beetlejuice, they point at the corner and say, walk over there, you know, and sometimes he can do it.
And there was the late Kenneth Keith Kallenbach. I don't know what problems he had, but I imagine they were not insubstantial.
I will never know, you know. I just know the first time he blew smoke out of his eyeballs, I'm still laughing at it.
Is that possible?
Yeah. No, that's why it was funny, because he couldn't do it and he threw up.
No, but he actually did do it a couple times. That's got to be on YouTube. You know, but, you know, it was such taking advantage of everything, you know. But
also, you guys are he was young, and when you're young, you don't see things with the wisdom of age and a nuance. You know, you're young and you're trying to build, for lack of a better word, a business for yourself.
Howard had on blinders. Boom.
He wouldn't have gotten where he got if he stopped.
Things he said and things he did to
if it would fly today.
No, there's no way it would.
No, not with me.
A lot of all the family wouldn't fly today. Nothing flies today.
You know, it's hard to imagine anything. You know, you take anything.
They do. Like if you watch Family Guy and The Simpsons, and maybe because it's a cartoon, they have more latitude. But the shit they do, you know, you're shocked that they're able to get away with
it. It's a cartoon. Somehow people...
Somehow that flies, you know, like, you know, clowns and cartoons and, you know.
Ventriloquist dummies can say anything.
That's, you know, Otto was a very good friend of mine because Otto Peterson and his dummy George, they, you know, because we were the two guys that were so dirty we couldn't get booked, you know. And he was such a hoot, but he had a talk show for a little while, and he's doing a talk show with a dummy, and it was great, but not if you were on the show, because if you're talking to the dummy, so you can't talk to Otto. But if you talk to the dummy, you're talking to a dummy, so you know.
Oh, I'm used to.
So it's a no-win situation, you know.
Okay, now having said all that, Danny, your question is.
Yeah.
I heard that you did gay conversion therapy.
Oh yeah.
Which way?
It worked. It seems to have worked.
What? Yeah. Yeah, I was in the program for like 2.5 years, I guess.
Well, you went with the Mormons, you told me.
But yeah, you got to start from the very, very beginning of this.
Yeah.
Well, the program?
Yeah, it's a program.
I would think it would be like going away to camp for a couple weeks.
No, it wasn't camp. It's a program. It's a weekly, program.
So you're how old?
I was 40. 39,
okay,
40.
So you're a 39-year-old man who's obviously extremely troubled by the fact that you're homosexual and you can't...
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I was totally gay. I was living a gay lifestyle. I had boyfriends. And then I became an Orthodox Jew at 39.
So you did Jew conversion therapy
first. It was gay conversion therapy via Jewish conversion.
I see.
No, wow. Hold on, let us all wrap our brains.
What happened was I just started becoming an observant Jew, just normal stuff,
wearing a yarmulke.
Yeah, I started praying and I found God, and so to speak, whatever.
How did you find God?
It just happened.
You woke up one morning, you were searching, you were depressed.
Yeah, it just happened very gradually, and then all of a sudden
found God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like at 38.
I'm interested in this.
Yeah, at 38 years old, I started becoming religious. It wasn't anything serious. I was just like dabbling.
No, that's serious. To find God.
No, it was a gradual thing. It wasn't so heavy and so, severe at once.
You went from eating not kosher to keeping kosher.
Yeah, slowly.
Okay, but I'm saying these are big changes. Going to
by the time it was changed, it was a very big change.
You changed a lot of the things you were going to eat.
Yeah, but not like in 1 minute. It didn't take 1 minute.
Somebody
wasn't like
to
one
say,
day
I
stopped. It took like, you know, like I would say, okay, now I'm not going to eat pig, and now I'm not going to eat silly cheeseburgers. It was a gradual thing, and then like little by little, and then I stopped eating, and then I started eating. It was a gradual thing.
This reminds me of, I mean, you're gay, you'll understand this. It reminds me of like when you're decorating.
Yeah.
You know, like when you change one little thing, then all of a sudden now the drapes need to be changed, and now
everything has to follow.
Sort of like that.
You change your. No,
I didn't
sudden,
do a rehaul, right?
You,
on emotional.
You became Orthodox Jewish. Like, oh shit! Now I'm a fag. What am I gonna?
Wait, now I gotta change that.
Right. So that was the last. That's exactly. Well, you're perfect.
Yeah,
right.
I know.
So then I'm talking to my brother and my mom, and that was the biggest mistake. They're all Orthodox, ultra Orthodox.
So you grew up in an Orthodox home.
I grew up in an Orthodox.
So you one time went away from it.
Yes, I grew up Orthodox.
Okay.
And I went to an all boys yeshiva. For high school, and then after that, and then by the time I was 26, 27, I was not Orthodox at all.
But wait, now, when
Go
you
ahead.
Started...
At all.
You said something about Mormon?
No, he jumped. No. He did go to some Mormon conversion therapy program.
The people who ran Jonah, which is the organization that I was... The conversion program that I was part of was run by Mormons. And this one Jewish guy, Arthur Goldberg. But he ran the whole thing, and the Mormons were the umbrella, right? And the Mormons ran it. I feel like Alan Funt's going to walk in and say, we were just kidding.
So you're in the chair with your eyeballs kept open. Let me go back
a little bit to answer your question. So then I'm telling my family, you know, I'm becoming religious which was a very big mistake because I really shouldn't have involved anybody in this personal journey of mine. And they're like, oh, so you're thinking of getting married. I'm like, because I'm 39. It's very normal to get married. By the time you're 23, you should be married. If you're 25 and you're not married in the Jewish Orthodox world, you're very old and there's a problem.
Perfect.
So here I am, 39 years old, and I'm like, well, that's a problem. Yeah. I'm telling my brother, who's a rabbi at Chappelle Yeshiva in Jerusalem, I'm like, it's a problem because I'm gay. He's like, okay, I'll call you back. So he calls me back 2 days later with a website for Jonah, which is a conversion therapy organization. He's like, get in contact with them. So I call them and blah, 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 and the rest is...
Tell us about what's the therapy like? Do you know how fascinating this is?
Are you kidding me?
Did you want to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't not want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I was like, let's give it a shot. Let's see what's going to make your parents happy? Let's see what this is all about. They're saying it works. I'm like, all right, I'm easy breezy. I'm not, I'm very open-minded. So I figured, let me see what this is all about. Like, I'm interested.
I always thought this was the kind of thing that your parents or the peer...
Well, you're right, Jackie. No, Jackie is right, because there were two groups. Now, at the time I was 40, there was a 17, 18, 19-year-old group. They're like, you're single. Do you want to be with the 18-year-old? I'm like, are you kidding me? They shouldn't be here. I'm like, people like me could be here if they wanted. But an 18-year-old, let them go dance and have a boyfriend. 18 years old, you don't know anything.
Their parents are throwing them there.
I felt bad for them. There was a group of like eight of them in the other room.
But you knew that to be religious, you had to be straight. Correct.
So that's the only reason why I was there, because I was observing Jewish law.
Which doesn't allow gay relationships.
Okay, so you get there day one. Is there a booklet, like textbooks, a syllabus? What is it? You show up
and it's like therapy. It's like group therapy. Everyone starts talking,
it's once a week, every day.
It was once a week, and then I took privates once a week also.
And the teacher or whatever the therapist that you met privately with, he represented that he had once been gay and he was
Alan Downing. Yes, he was also once gay and he was married and he's straight.
But this isn't a live-in situation. You didn't go to Utah or anything.
No, it wasn't live-in, but I did go on weekends called Journey into Manhood.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I did that like twice.
This is a documentary.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So give us a little bit of that.
The weekly group therapy.
You're interested in this, right, Dan?
I am, but I wish you'd let Danny talk a little bit more.
Well, it was, it was a therapy, it's a group of like, there were 10 of us. And it was like a priest. There were a couple of Hasidic guys. There was this French guy. I don't know what he was, why he was there. I was there. Everyone was married in my group. Except for three of us. And the priest wasn't married. I wasn't married. And there was another one or two people that were married. But all of them were married. And all of them had gotten married not really in touch with their sexuality. They had kids. And then they realized they were gay, which is very strange to me. I don't even understand how that happened.
I don't believe it.
Well, I don't understand, but
I know people who got married and didn't realize they were gay.
Kevin Meaney, who was a comic that used to work here, that died about a year ago, I guess it was.
More than a year. He claims
that he did not know that he was gay when he was married, and then everybody would tell him, you're gay, and he'd be like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And that, so I take him at his word.
Seemed like everybody else
knew. But I don't take him at his word.
Why would he lie about that?
To protect his wife from coming at him and saying, why did you put me through that when you knew that
I don't know if people are so self-aware. A lot of people, some people are not self-aware.
Everybody masturbates, right? When you masturbate.
I guess. I don't know.
You picture someone.
That's an assumption. I don't know if everybody masturbates.
Well, I presume Kevin Meaney masturbated. You picture somebody as the object of your attraction. I think that, who do you picture?
That's a great point. You're making a very good argument.
It's an interesting point. On the other hand,
if you're going to jerk off, who are you going to jerk off to? It's true.
I didn't know I was gay. That's why I've been picturing a guy all this time.
I don't know. That's very strange.
Stupid.
And I have some friends.
What Norma's saying makes sense. I wouldn't necessarily dismiss out of hand the notion that some people just don't know. I think it's a topic worth delving into.
It is. I always found it strange. Anyway, so the therapy, we would talk. Then it turned into drama therapy. We'd like, it was very, like, we'd go back to childhood wounds, and then we would go back to being children, and then talking about what it was. There was trauma involved. We'd take bats, and we'd hit, like, we'd hit bags, punching bags. It was a whole drama therapy. That's what it, pretty much what it broke down to.
And you did it for 2.5 years.
And I did that for 2.5 years, and I would do the weekend programs 3 times a year. And
did you have sex with women in those 2.5 years?
No, I never had sex with women ever in my life until today. Never until today.
You didn't even give it a shot. That wasn't part of the therapy, like, you know.
No, no.
Now that's the biggest shock of all.
No.
You think they put your feet in the water.
Yeah, my mother.
We're going to teach you to swim for 2.5 years, but you're not getting in the water.
My mother always wanted me to have sex with women. She's like, you want me to get you a prostitute? And she's a religious woman. It's so funny. Yeah. She's like, I'll get you a prostitute. We'll take you somewhere. Do it. And yeah, no, I never had it. I was never interested.
Well, you know. If you're not attracted to women, I don't know that having sex with a woman is going to change your mind at all. You first need the attraction.
Right, exactly. And I was there.
And you didn't have it.
Right, and I was there to see if there was some sort of understanding, an idea of healing. They were like, it's a childhood wound. They said that you can heal this childhood wound that made you gay.
They blame your mother for this?
No, they don't blame anybody. They were trying to find out each person and what their wound was and where it comes from and what is holding them back from being the man that they need to be. It even, and by the way, you should know that these weekends, there were a lot of straight men there who are pussy whipped, and they were there because they didn't have balls, and they were straight.
They wanted to be men.
They were straight. They really were, and they were married, and they weren't gay at all, and they never said they were gay, but they just wanted to be men. They wanted to find their masculinity. So these programs, these weekends, they're still going. It had nothing to do with being gay, but the gays were there too. So, you know, we had a group, the gay, you know, we had our own corner, but most of them were straight, really.
How big is this group?
The weekends? Well, they're like 300 people, men.
But the weekly classes.
The weekly classes. In my group, there were 10. And then the 18-year-old group, there were like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8. I don't know. I would see them going in and out. They were scared. They were like freaked out. These kids were like, there were chickens running in and out. It was like, I felt bad for them because they were so young.
That's a lot of money you spent.
I spent a lot of money. Right.
You believe they were sincere in taking your money, or is it a scam?
I don't know. I was sincere. I don't know if they were sincere. I'm hoping they were sincere.
It's like Trump University?
Yeah. I don't know.
Do they offer that?
Yeah.
But do you feel, you know, that being gay is so much a part of who you are that if you became straight by some miracle, that then you would no longer be Danny Cohen? You know,
I don't know what that means. What do you mean? I know, because of the public.
Like a fat comic that doesn't want to lose weight because they think
I'm not talking about that, but I'm just saying that's such a part of your who you are, being gay.
Well, remember, I became an Orthodox Jew, so I left a lot of what I was doing anyway, and I was living a different lifestyle also. So I figured, oh, okay, so let me just go, and then I realized this is not where I want to go. This is not what I'm. This is all wrong. It was all wrong. And it was so, you know, I just sort of
dropped. Well, it was all wrong because it wasn't working, or because you don't want to be straight?
Because it wasn't working.
But if it did, if I could give you a pill, give you a pill today that would make you heterosexual, would you take it?
Today. At 50? Because I'm 50.
Okay.
Today? Yes. No, because now I don't want to have. Now I'm 50. At 40, I would have taken the pill. Wow. Then I have kids. Why not? I want to have a normal life. I want to have a normal life. From the world I'm in, being gay isn't normal, and it doesn't work. I have family members that would not accept me if I had a boyfriend. I mean, that's not why I don't have a boyfriend, but I couldn't have a relationship with anybody in my family if I had a boyfriend. Anyone.
Is this as fascinating as I think it is?
To me, it is.
I got 4,000 questions.
Go ahead.
At some point...
Let's go.
At some point, was it like, hey, look at that babe over there? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
The diagram, they pulled out the diagram. This tits.
Well, it was interesting because some of the guys, they were like that. And I'm like, oh, they used to be gay and now they're doing that. It's very strange to me. It's funny that we're talking about this because, you know, I haven't spoken about this in a long time. And I was on the subway today and I saw one of the guys from my program. He's a Hasidic Jewish guy that lives in my neighborhood that I never see. And he was on my subway. And he... had a boyfriend and was very big in the LGBT community in Chicago. He used to be a big, you know, he was being in the old protest, and he was very active in the gay community in Chicago. Suddenly, one day, he said, I don't want to do this anymore. He became religious, and then he got married a year and a half later without any program. He just decided to just, I'm going to get religious. And then he got married, and he has 7 kids.
Wow.
And he was in my group.
You were telling me...
But he's on medication. He's on, like, depressant medication. So there's something going on with his brain.
From the 7 kids.
You were telling me, I think, at the time...
He's completely numb, right.
When we were talking about this, that you were thinking of finding a lesbian woman that just wanted to have an arrangement.
Towards the end, I was like, I don't know what... This isn't working. And I was like, maybe we can find a lesbian woman who wants to be religious. Then I realized women are different than men. I have never met... A Jewish Orthodox, and I've never met a woman who would hide. I don't know anyone. I don't know any women that hide.
What do you mean hide?
They're all honest. They're about their sexuality, like closeted women.
She wouldn't pretend to be straight,
right?
But not that she would pretend to be straight, but because part of the mandate in religious.
There are a lot more closeted men than closeted women. I think.
But okay, but because of the mandate to have children in a religious home, what? You know, you might find a lesbian woman that's willing to have children with you and have a Jewish home, not because she's hiding, but because that is what you're supposed to do.
Because that's what you need.
I want to do, but all those Jewish women that would want to be, they would find another Jewish woman because according to Jewish law, you can be a lesbian.
You can?
What?
Yeah. There's no, you 100%, there's no Jewish, the Jewish law, you're allowed to be a lesbian, yeah.
They're that's no, awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But
you can live a lesbian lifestyle. It's not recommended.
But it's not the ideal lifestyle.
It's not the ideal lifestyle, but they can by Jewish law.
And you can't have kids.
They can argue with the rabbi, and the rabbi can't win. There's no winning to that argument. They can win.
That's a big block in this whole thing.
Well, because the Bible said, I mean, the one passage that everybody points to is a man shall not lay with a man as with a woman.
Right.
Right? And that's the long...
They don't talk about women.
They don't mention women. And is that the only thing that the Bible says with regard to homosexuality?
The Talmud goes into it a little more.
But the Talmud is just Joyel, everybody who has something to...
She's gonna come sit down, Joyelle. I don't know if you know this, but Danny had gay conversion therapy for 2.5 years.
Hi.
Did it work?
And look at him.
This is Jackie Marling.
I gave it my best shot.
That's a hell of a thing to spring on somebody that's just sitting down at a podcast.
Well, the worst has happened at the table.
I was almost molested by my rabbi when I was a little boy, by the way.
Oh. That happens in the Jewish community, too?
It happens It happens everywhere, Joel. It happens everywhere. And I was getting ready to be bar mitzvahed, and I hadn't gone to Hebrew school, so my father hired the rabbi from the Dobbs Ferry Temple to tutor me. And he and my mother went out to the movies, and I was home alone with the rabbi. And he says, well, do you know what it means to be Jewish? And I'm like, yeah. And I said, whatever it was. And he says, well, what else? And I'm like, I don't know. He goes, well, Jews are circumcised. I said, oh, yeah, I knew that. He goes, well, do you know what that is? And I had never seen an uncircumcised penis. I really didn't know. I think that's common. Like, we didn't know.
Sure. I saw a friend of mine once, and I was like, I thought he had been injured.
Right.
So I didn't know whatever it is. So I said, I don't really know where it is or whatever it is. So he says, where's your room? I said, upstairs. So he takes me out to my room.
No!
He lays me down on the bed. That's all I remember. No, and he lays me down on the bed, and he starts to unbuckle my belt.
Wow.
And for some reason, I stopped him. And I'm telling you, it wasn't because we weren't taught about molestation. No, it was never on my radar. I was just shy.
You had no idea what he was doing.
I had no idea that he was doing anything wrong. Right. I just didn't like the idea of a stranger, you know, looking at my peepee, you know.
Right.
So I stopped him, and he didn't force the issue.
Did you say you had a headache or anything?
No. Well, it's funny you said it, because when my father got home, I told him the story.
Oh.
Now it clicked immediately to him, and you know what my father said? He says, "Next time you hit him with your purse." This is what my father said to me.
So you didn't go all that way for that joke.
No, it's just true. So help me God. My father, next time you hit him with your purse.
He didn't call the rabbi and say, what the fuck were you doing?
I think he did, but I think in my father's wisdom, he knew enough that I wasn't traumatized by it. And rather than like freak me out about it,
screw up the
he
world.
Made it off as a joke. and then he called the...
Is this the rabbi that bar mitzvahed you?
Well, whatever he called, it was the junior rabbi. The senior rabbi did end up bar mitzvahing me, but I never saw the junior one again.
Your father was like, please, that happened to me too.
But looking back on it now, like, you'd think a father would like get a baseball bat, right?
Of course.
I mean, I had no... And
well, you never... Maybe he took care of it and you didn't know anything, you know.
No, because...
He never became senior rabbi.
He never became senior rabbi. Well, but it's an interesting story. So yeah, I was almost molested by the rabbi. So,
you know, it's funny because I don't know, molested. I was at Boy Scout camp and I was telling dirty jokes when I was in fifth and sixth grade, and we're all telling jokes in the counselor's tent, and they all leave, and then the guy offered me $1 a minute to blow him, and I was like, no. But I didn't take it like some crazy. I was like, no, it just didn't sound like a good idea.
Yeah. Someone older than you, or
he must have been like, you know, he might have been 20 or 22, but you know, I didn't hit him with a club or anything. I was a real little kid, but I'm thinking, I had a strong personality, and I said no. I bet you if he took 10 shots at the goal, he hit half of the time he hit a home run. You know,
you offer a young Jewish Danny Cohen $1 a minute to blow you.
I mean, I'm getting a lot of money.
Line him up.
Right. So what's your molestation story, Julia?
Luckily, I do not have one.
when we were kids, I was born 62. This was not on our radar. We didn't perceive these things like that. Even if a high school teacher was going out with a girl in the class or whatever it was, we didn't see that.
That never happened in my high school.
Oh, it happened in my high school.
There was this guy Chester the Molester. I think it was an urban legend. But people used to remember. Did you ever talk about that on Long Island, Chester the Molester?
We had a guy in a Ford Fairlane, white Ford Fairlane, that used to call you over to his window and point at his dick. You know, but that. As far as we know, he's like the town drunk or the local guy that carries the basketballs for St. Dominic's. You know, it's like it was just part of the. You know, we knew it was crazy, but it was part of the.
Part of Mayberry.
There was an older fellow on our block that used to invite all the kids over for hot chocolate and to play games. But he was a perfect gentleman. All we did was have hot chocolate and play games. But I do wonder, and I used to tell my father, "Yeah, Mr. Blank, I'm going over to his house to, you know, I mean, I just wonder today if a parent would." An alarm bell would go off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, parent might say, oh, what exactly are you doing over there?
I mean,
you
did he ever sneak any of you guys out
of
the room?
Well, maybe he did, and I just wasn't invited.
10 go in, 9 go out.
Yeah. You were the wingman?
You were the wingman. Dan was
it
cover.
It could be that I just didn't tickle his fancy, but I think he was, I don't think he was doing it with anybody, but, you know, just in today's day and age, I think a kid might be told, don't go to an old dude's house and, you know, play and have hot chocolate.
Well, yeah. Well, imagine a kid walking in and telling his parents, "Yeah, I was over at Mr. Smith's house, and you know he's 90, and we're all 12, and he gave us cookies." Like, ding, ding,
I wouldn't
ding.
Let my kid go to some guy's house. No.
But in those days,
you know, it was a different world.
What does an older guy have anything to do with my kids? What does that have to do with
my mother used to let me take acting classes in Hell's Kitchen when I was 13 years old.
Oh, you're a city girl.
Yeah, she would let. No, but I'm a Jersey girl, so I would take the bus into Port Authority at night to take acting classes in Hell's Kitchen, and it was not. This was like 90s Hell's Kitchen. So,
yeah, I can't believe I was never molested.
I wasn't molested.
You were not molested.
No.
And, you know, and these people who molest children, they're really cursed, right? I mean, like...
I guess so.
Do you think that they're any less born with this desire than a gay man is born with his desire or a straight man is born with their
you're
desire? Saying,
you're asking if it's social or if it's nurture or nature?
Well, whether it's nurture or nature, either way, it's something they probably didn't
ask for.
You think it's nature?
I agree with Dan. Yeah, whether it's nurture or nature, it's something, you know, some of them are nurtured and some of it is nature. But I think it's a mix of both.
Now, they claim that's not curable, right? Like,
nothing else. Is anything else curable in the realm of sexuality?
Right.
They can't cure poor Danny of his homosexual.
Yeah, they couldn't cure me.
They can't. they tried and failed with transgender people. Right. And they said, well, the best solution we have for you is we can give you tits and a vagina, but we can't change your psychology.
Right.
And so they don't seem to be able to change anybody's psychology.
Well, the curse of time is taking my erection away.
Yes, time will eventually take your sex drive away and maybe your erection, but they don't seem to have any ability to change your basic sexual proclivities.
Right.
Well, and the transgender is more than just a sexual proclivity, as we've learned on this show. It's just feeling like the sex that you are, even if you have no sex drive, right?
Well, and that's true.
My group was they were married men, so they were trying to figure out a way that they can live happy lives with their wives and figure out a way where it can just work.
Yeah, they're living a lie. They're living a lie, and they don't want to live a lie.
Right, but their wives knew at that point.
Wives knew.
Yeah. And they were trying to figure out how they can keep their life together
and
keep it working.
Women just amazing. Like, a woman will be supportive of her.
Oh, they
gay
were great.
Man's
they were all supportive.
Or in denial,
huh?
Or in denial.
But I'm saying a man would just like get out. Like, women are just so devoted in a way that men are not.
I think so. They're most. They're much.
Of.
Yeah. Then you're right. I agree.
And these guys were there on their own volition, or their wives sent them there.
No, they were there on their own volition
to make the wives happy.
To make their lives happy. They had children. They had unhappy marriages. They felt bad for their wives. They felt bad that they were in a situation that they didn't want their family to fall apart. They're like, how do I make this work? I know I'm halfway there, but I got to make it work. So they were there to try to make it work. And there were, a lot of them were, you know, they would talk about it. And they found happiness in the program. It worked for them. You know, for me, I had a much longer way to go. So I wasn't about to plunge if it wasn't working. They were already took the plunge. They got married. They had kids. They were already there. So for me,
they just had to figure out how to make it not a daily torture to be married.
Right.
All right. So we got a couple of things to cover. First of all, Joelle's going on Seth Meyers.
Yes, tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did that come about for you? They just
got a new badass manager. She's awesome.
Who's that, man? Who's your manager?
Tova Silberman.
I know Tova.
Yeah.
Tova used to.
That's your manager.
She was on the show. No. She was never. Oh, she was on the show, but she didn't talk. She was here just auditing, if you will. She used to work at the Gersh Agency.
Yes.
And I'm with the Gersh Agency.
Yes.
How come you're not on Seth Meyers?
Because A, she's no longer with the Gersh Agency. B, I do have an audition for Seth Meyers coming up. You know. C. The Gersh Agency, you know, God bless him, I don't hear from him that often.
Are you nervous? is this your first network?
This is my first late night set.
Yeah,
yes.
Congratulations.
I'm super excited, so I'm going to go run some time downstairs.
Joelle, how many times have you seen Black Panther?
Twice.
Oh, just twice?
What did you think of it? That's a good question, Dan. What did you think of it?
I think it was a perfect movie.
Perfect movie.
Well, you went there dressed in costume.
Yes, both times I did. First time dressed as a Black Panther, Angela Davis, and the second time dressed in a Zamunda African garb.
Zamunda, you mean from the movie, from the Eddie Murphy movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Did you see it, Jackie?
Yes.
And?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, I'm not a Marvel Comics guy. I drew the line Superman, Batman, and Archie, and those were my comics in the 50s. And, you know, I never went to the Spider-Man and the whole thing, so... But I loved it. You know, it was great.
It was good. It was really good.
What about Japanese hentai porn?
That's good.
I loved it.
It's great.
I saw it before.
Shut up. Everybody white is just like jumping all over to just express how much they love this movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, I didn't dance out of there, but it was. You know,
it doesn't warrant the.
Well, it's an event. I mean, you know, where did you see it?
Culturally, it's important.
Did you see it at the Magic Johnson's Theater?
No, I did not. I went to Union Square, which felt like Magic Johnson because everybody was screaming at the screen. And then the second time I was at Brooklyn Academy of Music.
What was the percentage composition of the audience?
It was, the second time I went with the NAACP of Brooklyn, so it was all black. But the first time it was probably like 70% black.
Well, that's
y'all gave us the weekend. I appreciate
as a non-black man, that would probably be the best place for me to see it to get the full experience.
I think everyone.
I don't want to see it in Darien, Connecticut.
Oh, no. I think every person should see a black film at a black theater its opening weekend. Put that on your bucket list. It's very entertaining.
Will you take me to the next black film opening?
Of course, I will go with you.
Well, the problem is, Noam, there'll probably never again be a black film quite like this, at least not for a while. This was the biggest, you know, there's not going to be a bigger one.
I can't imagine that there would be.
They put the marbles into one bucket for this. Was great.
Well, they're doing Infinity Wars is next. So
look, it's pretty good.
It's great.
But it had a few flaws. There were a lot of devices that were derivative of other movies. Mm-hmm. When he throws him over the waterfall, nobody thinks he's dead. And that's like the dramatic, you know.
Why are you spoilering?
Oh, come on. Everybody's seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Listen, that's my point. It's not a spoil because nobody thinks when he goes over the waterfall that he's dead.
You mean the train's not going to run over Batman?
The train's not going to run over Batman. Right, exactly.
Right. I mean, that's the superhero trope.
What is the take away from it? Is there a lesson to be learned from Black Panther? What do we learn, if anything? What is the moral of the story? Is there a moral of the story?
Community.
Black people can be superheroes, too? I don't
okay.
know.
Oh, I walked away with community.
Community?
Yeah, loyal.
There's
community.
So many lessons.
Yeah, there. Community. You want to stick... Community is very important in this world.
Yeah.
Having community... Sticking
having
together,
village.
Not being divided, sticking together. Yeah. It is... You're stronger when you stick together.
Now, yeah. Now race was in the news this week as well, mm-hmm. because Farrakhan, this Women's March thing. You know about this?
No.
Oh, well, no, never mind.
Tell me, please.
Well,
you want to talk about the school walkout, Noam?
Huh?
The school walkout. I thought you wanted to discuss.
What exactly was the school walkout there?
They were walking out of school.
Well, in protest of the Parkland.
The protest.
Yeah, 17-minute walkout.
I guess.
I thought it was going to be they were all going to stay home and not go to school until... That was, I think, the original plan.
No, they were planning to go to school and walk out on purpose.
Okay, but originally I heard that they were just kids weren't going to go to school until they passed some gun laws or something like that. I don't know if that was ever on the agenda. But anyway, this was just a 17 minutes?
For 17
lives.
And in some schools, the teachers, you know, hailed it and walked out and cheered with them. And at other schools, the kids all got detention. Which
detention?
Is, yeah.
For 17 minutes?
You know,
I would have went to Carvel.
Could you walk out of your gay conversion therapy for 17 minutes? Anyway.
Now, what I'm saying, they literally got punished.
That must be in the red states.
For sure.
Yeah. Too bad you don't know about the Farrakhan thing. But I have something to talk to you.
Tom is just dying.
I have something racially to ask you.
Please.
I notice a lot of times situations that if I were black, I think I would feel resentment in the sense of times when people hold their fire. Like, for instance, this voter suppression stuff. You know, of course I'm against voter suppression, right? But one of the laws they want to pass is picture IDs. And the whole pretext of this objection is that you can't expect black people to get a picture ID the way white people do. That's voter suppression. Like, and I'm thinking, they go to the movies, they go to bars, everybody black I know drives a car. Like how
people live in America.
Yeah, how dysfunctional are these white liberals ready to go on record as their opinion about black folk that they want to say that if you ask them to get picture IDs, you are suppressing their vote. You know what I'm saying? Like, and the same thing with this, like when Farrakhan says the Jews, like, you know, it's like, well, but you can't really expect them to stand up again. Of course you can. People live up to whatever you expect of them. And I don't think I'm being hard on black people. I think that's being respectful of black people, no?
It's reasonable.
I can see that point, but I think it just perpetuates the fallacy that there is voter fraud. Voter fraud is not a thing. And so the part of...
I agree with that.
Yeah, so...
Nevertheless...
Statistically... There is no need for someone to require a photo ID because in some areas, like maybe a senior citizen might not have a photo ID or an ex-convict might have a photo ID where they're changing all those laws. So the only point
is... ID for everything.
But the only point is they're just trying to chip away. They're chipping away. So that's part of them chipping away at making it less accessible.
I do reject the motivation. I can't stress it. I mean, it's like contradictory thoughts, but they're both true. Yes, they should all be ashamed of themselves for any devious plot they're trying to come up with to suppress black votes. Nevertheless, I could also see black people saying, we don't give a shit if you want photo IDs. What do you think? We can't get a photo ID? Like, it's so cute that you think that's going to suppress our vote. Like, we can't get photo. Of course we can get photo IDs. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, it's insulting. Come
with something better than that if you want to suppress our vote. That's my point. Like, that's just not going to do it, okay? Because we're just like you. But then white liberals, they obviously don't think black people are just like white people. They obviously don't. They don't think that black people can be asked to get photo IDs. It's nuts to me. Like, if I were a black leader, I'd be like, fuck yourself. Of course we can get photo IDs.
I mean, essentially, we don't trust Democrats or Republicans if you're smart enough, but we have to have somebody that's going to be repping for us.
I'm always stunned by this photo ID thing and the Farrakhan
thing. I'm stunned by most left-liberal things. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point in it. They're doing it just to chip away at our access to voting. That's all.
Yeah, but it won't work.
It does work.
I know black people. and they can get photo IDs. I'm telling
I know
a lot of black people.
That should be the name of this episode.
I've never seen anybody black that I met who seemed to be incapable of getting a photo ID.
I can take you to Brooklyn.
As long as the office stayed open a little bit later than the hours that it posted. No, I'm just kidding.
Valid point.
Yeah, all right, go ahead. What else, Dan? What else
in
the news?
No, I just wanted to. I know we never really hit Jackie's book too much.
Go ahead.
The Joke Man Bowed a Stern might be a good way to end things, just to
plug that.
Mr. Martling's Jackie. By the way, is your first name Jackson or Jacob?
John.
Oh, it's John.
I was John Jr., but I was Jackie from, you know, as long as I was from the time
is Jackie
I was
cognizant. A typical nickname for John?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like John, Jackie Kennedy. Oh, no, that's then they call him Jack. They call him Jack Kennedy.
Jack Kennedy, yeah. It's a very typical nickname for John.
I didn't know that, but in any case, from bow to stern. So this is basically focusing on the Stern years?
It's, well, let me just give the, it's JackieTheJokeMan.com. The URL comes up. Artie Lang did the forward, and he also did the forward on the audio version. And it's like 30 or 40% me and growing up and stuff, and then the rest is, you know, all Stern Show stories. And the whole story, how I wound up there and everything, and people that are big fans... It's like a chronological thing that just they'll know where they were. Oh, I know where I was when the movie came out. I know where I was during the Channel 9 show. I know where I was when Jackie first came aboard. You know, so it's and it's fun.
I remember where I was when the name Baba Booey became the nickname of Baba Booey.
Yeah,
I remember I was driving on the Merritt Parkway on my way to a temp job. But in any case, that's my
temp secretary, like typing.
No, like temp. Like I was home from college, and it was like I believe, if memory serves, like 1988 when Baba Booey was anointed Baba Booey.
Probably, yeah. It could have been 86. It could have been 88.
It wasn't 86.
The old studio,
because
yeah,
it was definitely I was in college, so
all right,
it wasn't
so
86.
88. Might have been 88.
I always suspected that at least once something happened between Howard and Robin. Something. There seemed to be some sexual tension. Something.
Neither I nor anybody else suspected that.
People said, you know, all right, Howard was with Jessica Hahn in the trailer during the movie. He's not that guy.
He's not that
guy. He doesn't do that. Yeah, I don't know how to explain that. You know, you all knew people in school that weren't guys that hit on girls or went up to girls. And he was 6'6" or 6'5" since he was in sixth grade. So he always had to act like an adult. He always stood out, you know. So that's why he's weird and crazy. But, you know, people say, oh, I know he banged you. No, he never went near anybody. You know, and he really didn't. And, you know, and if he did, he fooled me, fooled Freddie, fooled everybody.
Well, that's just not his thing, you know.
That's not how he rolled.
I just felt it was impossible. His thing
in life, I guess, was conquering the radio world. That was his kink. That was his sex.
That's all he wanted.
Right.
You know.
Makes sense to me.
Jackie, so Artie is doing the, has done the forward to the book. Are you guys buddies?
Yeah. I mean, he was, that's another thing that people don't realize. I left that show in March of 2001. He didn't come aboard till October. People say, oh, it's good to see you guys getting along again. We had nothing to do with each other. There was a huge gap of time between the time I left. They tried like a whole bunch of people in my seat. You know.
Who flunked out of that seat?
They tried everybody, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if people... I didn't listen, but I don't know whether they were trying people out or just plugging people in to see what happened, or, you know.
Do you think, and I always thought otherwise, I always thought Howard made a mistake going to satellite radio.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I actually had a contract, an unsigned contract, to be the voice of Raw Dog. And it was for a lot of money, and I was very excited. And then my lawyer called me up and said they took the deal off the table. And I said, why? He said, because they think they're going to get Howard Stern to come to Sirius. Or maybe it was X, whatever it was at the time.
Sirius.
And I said to myself, why not just tell me, look, we changed our mind, we don't want you. Why lie to me? You know, because in my mind, there was no way he was ever going, because that whole goddamn show was let me at him. You know, hold me back, hold me back.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, people say, oh, you're going to come over to my house, don't curse in front of my parents. I'm like, hey, I was on the radio 18 years. I never got bleeped. People forget, we were radio clean, radio friendly. And going up against the rules was the whole show. And I'm like...
The frustration.
If all of a sudden you're on Sirius and you can say and do anything, it's like playing football with no lines. You know, right. No referee.
Yeah, I agree.
And then all of a sudden, boom, Howard Stern coming to say, well, at least they weren't lying to me.
That was one reason I thought that I agree that I thought that the idea of being able to curse was probably more important in theory than it actually would turn out to be.
No, the frustration was funny and interesting.
The frustration was funny and was inspiring for creativity, you know, different ways.
But one thing, I left, and then they were at K-Rock for another 5 years, and I guess, by all accounts, it got real, real bad. Like, they were curtailing them so bad. Like, yeah. They were bleeping everything and taking all, it was killing the content.
But to me, the other reason I thought it was a mistake, because when you're on terrestrial radio, your audience is 300 million people. A certain number watch. This day, I used to listen like once a month to Howard Stern or whatever. Now you have to get 100% of your listeners from this finite group of subscribers. And therefore, Howard Stern, who was like the cultural zeitgeist guy, became a niche guy.
Because people, all they had to do
and
was
that
go,
was a huge mistake.
They just had to go click, and there he was. You know, the few times I was late, you know, I'm riding down the expressway, and people are yelling at me because he's saying I'm late, and everybody's listening to the show. That's get right. to work, you jerk off, you know, like.
Or was 9/11, they were still on the regular radio, right?
Yes, they were.
That's a perfect example. So everybody started listening to Howard Stern on 9/11, right? This is one of the.
That was the most fascinating day of radio probably in history,
right.
As far as.
Yeah, on satellite, no. It wouldn't have had that impact. And I feel like, yes, he made millions and millions of dollars, but he had more money than his great, great grandkids could ever spend anyway.
Always.
But that huge audience, it's like, it's similar in a weird way to the Comedy Star. Like, we have a dinky little basement here, but like Seinfeld and Rock, they all come down here because they need the audience.
It's a shot heard around the world.
And they can't, with all their money, they can't get that. And with all his money, he can't buy the access to 300 million people that he used to have now that he's on satellite. And I think that diminished him. In some way.
Creatively, you think
no,
so?
No, just his impact on the culture. His impact on the culture, which has to matter to him. I mean, it was a huge thing for him to have that kind
of... He was supposedly really, really pissed off more millions of people didn't follow him to Sirius.
I mean, his movie opened to number one, right? Would his movie open to number one if he had been on Sirius? No.
You know, the whole thing with paying for radio, I would go out to dinner... And I'd sit there, and a waiter would come up and say, oh, are you Jackie Martling? I'd go, yeah. And they go, oh, man, I was such a big fan. I really love the Stern Show. I said, yeah, I'm not there anymore. And they'll say, yeah, you know, I can't pay for, you know, for Sirius. And this is a waiter. He's got better things to do with $10 a month, which sounds, it's kind of hard to accept. But seriously, you know, if you got a billion things you got to pay for, like, I'm not paying for radio.
If you listen every day, like I drive, so I have it for sure. But some people, like I said, would listen to it from time to time. Listen to it for a couple of weeks and then put it down for a few months. And then you're not going to pay $10 a month.
And then it's time for renewal and they're like, ah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of people, you get 6 months free with your car when you rent it or buy it. And then they let it, you know.
Too bad. Despite what I'm saying, I'm a huge Howard Stern fan. So I say that only because I want kind of what's best for him in a weird way,
but
even though I don't know.
That's what's crazy. People come and say, I'm the biggest fan. I was a huge, huge fan. No, I don't get serious. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, where's your priorities?
How big are you?
No, serious. Listen, radio, you can put on any radio in your house. You can put it on your friend's house. Sirius, you have to have that radio with that ID. If you don't have it with you, you can't put it on. It's
extra
money. You have to be a real fan.
If you are not a radio listener in your car, there's not much to
separate. And there's a little bit of a technical aspect to it. And so many people don't, you know, you get in the car and go click. That's as technical as a lot of people want to get, you know.
Yeah, I wonder why he doesn't go back or whatever. Anyway, we're out of time.
Well, Joelle, I wish you well with your new fabulous agent. She is a wonderful young lady, is she not?
I love her so much.
We all wish you well.
Thank you.
I love Joelle. Joelle was one of the heroes
Talking about Tova Silverman, her agent.
I know, but that's what
Joelle is also wonderful.
She was one of the heroes of our Guy Branum podcast. And
I'll take it.
I would be thankful to her for that. And Danny Cohen, give it another shot. Don't be a quitter.
And I want to announce I'm at the Studio Theater in Lindenhurst on Long Island, March 31st. And I tweet filthy, stupid jokes every day at International Marijuana Time, 420, at Jackie Martling.
Look, has one other question. You're 70 years old, you said?
He looks good,
by the way. I just turned 70 on Valentine's Day.
You have trouble remembering all those jokes?
What'd you ask? No, you know, it's so funny. Because sometimes things slip through the crack. You know, people come up and say, why the chicken crossed the road? And I go, yeah, I used to know that one, you know. But no, not so far, no. You know, and I'll tell you, you could say, oh, let's go to what's it called? A bar. You know, you can get stuck on words and crazy things and people's names from past TV show or something like that. But I haven't got, knock on wood, to where I'm on stage and I'm like, what's next? I mean, we've all had that 45-minute, one-second pause where nothing is in there. And right. then, you know, but that had those millions of years ago.
I have trouble remembering names now, and it's fucking driving me crazy. I mean, it's driving me nuts. It's, you have it too, Joe? You're not old enough.
I think you reach a capacity where we meet
maybe
so
we
many
just,
people.
Yeah, you're
that,
full.
Yeah, I'm like...
Well, I had it once. Once I ran to the bathroom. I met a girl that I know, and I forgot her name, and I said, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Ran to the bathroom, went to my Facebook, and started scrolling to find her picture. And then I found her picture, and I walked out of the bathroom. Hey, Alana, good to see you. But
you told me another story. You couldn't remember a comedian's name one time.
Well, I couldn't remember a comedian's name, and I had to look on the sheet, the schedule, and I looked down. I looked through the schedule, and then when I saw the name, it triggered.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you wouldn't believe
that
how
happens.
Many people that happens to. You know, you talk about it, and somebody goes, oh, yeah, I do that too, you know. Because once you have that mental block, it's like, oh.
So the other night, I tried to compensate lack of knowing somebody's name with enthusiasm. You know, and I saw him, I was like, my man!
Yeah.
Hey,
which is a bulletin board, you know.
All right, we got to go. Listen,
Jackie, great guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope I didn't yak too much.
No, not enough.
Thank you, Jackie.
Pleasure.
Okay, good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.